Hey, everybody, and welcome back. Today we're going to be breaking down the UFC 272 main card, which was headlined by Covington and Masvidal. A lot of bad blood in that fight, right? A lot of, I don't know how this is going to do in terms of pay-per-view buys. I think that it's a good fight, it's an exciting fight, but there's not a title on the line, right? I think they're kind of relying on that whole narrative that they used to be friends, now they're not, now they're like enemies, to sell it. And I think Masvidal is, he does have some star power now, but man, I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. We'll see. And then you have Rafael Dos Anjos versus Rafael Fiziev in your co-main event. That falls off, right? And Renato Moicano steps up to fight RDA. But Fiziev just knocked out Moicano, so this matchup isn't quite as exciting, right? So I don't know. Anyway, we're going to break it down. But first, I want to take a few minutes and talk about all the shit going on with Cain Velasquez. And before we hop into the actual story, I just have to preface this by saying, like, Cain Velasquez, when he was in his prime and when he was healthy, was probably the baddest motherfucker that's ever walked planet Earth. One of them. I mean, he was a incredibly gifted martial artist and probably, like I said, probably the greatest heavyweight of all time when he was in his prime and when he was healthy. I think injuries and a lot of overtraining and stuff led to him not being able to ever kind of accomplish what he was capable of. But I think that a prime Cain Velasquez runs through Francis Ngannou. Like, what happened in their actual fight, I don't think it plays out that way if Cain's in his prime. You know what I mean? But anyway, besides the point. Well, kind of. Because my point with that kind of is just that, like, Cain is one of the most important historical figures in UFC heavyweight history, right? And his name comes out in this, and you don't hear a lot about him. Like, outside of fighting when he's active, you don't really see a lot of headlines rolling in about Cain Velasquez. He's not really getting in trouble for shit. He's not really doing this or that. And it rolls in and said, I think the initial headline was that he was, like, being accused of attempted murder. And he had shot this guy. And then over the next couple of days, more details start to come out about the case, right? And you find out that he was driving a Ford F-250, crashed it into the Chevy Silverado, pursued it, fired some rounds at the Silverado while they were driving, and one of the rounds struck one of three people who were in the Silverado, right? And then more details start to come out about, okay, who are these people? Well, the guy that he hit with the bullet was Paul Bender, right? The guy that he shot and actually hit. The other two people in the car, one, her name was Patricia Galarte or Galart. I'm going to go with Galart. I don't know. Galart. Patricia Galart and her son, Harry Galart, who's 43 years old. So you know this Patricia lady's probably a little bit older. And Paul Bender, who got shot, is the husband of Patricia and the stepfather of Harry, right? Now, more details start coming out, and you start finding out, all right, what would the motive be for him to be hitting this fucking car? You find out that Cain Velasquez had hired Patricia Galart, to provide daycare assistance to one of his relatives, right? Under 14 years old, that's what, a juvenile, right? And during that time, when she was providing the daycare service, Harry Galart, the 43-year-old son, had molested the relative of Cain Velasquez up to 100 times, supposedly. And he had gone through, like, legal procedures for it, and he was out on bail. And it kind of seems, without knowing any other context at all, right? Like, this has got to be, I would assume, a son or daughter, I would guess, for him to have this sort of rage and for it to be this motivated. Maybe niece, nephew, I don't know, just somebody he's very close to, but I would guess son or daughter. And I would also, it just kind of seems like, and there's a video that you guys can watch on MMAJunkie.com of the chase. Like, there's a piece of the chase on there. And the Silverado is all caved in on the right-hand side. There's, like, it looks like there's bullet holes in it. And Cain's pursuing them in this F-250. It's, like, black F-250. And I don't know. It was crazy to hear about. And the more details that kept coming out about it, the crazier it got. And I think, oh man, it's such a tough situation. Like, I think it's impossible when you start hearing about all that not to sympathize with Cain Velasquez and think, like, man, you see all the people saying, like, free Cain and stuff. Like, what he was doing, I can understand that, and I do think that there is this sort of justification for that. Like, are you, what do you do with people like that in the world? And you feel like that just it's, I don't know. I'm not saying that it should be okay to, I guess, just take the law into your own hands and murder somebody, right? Like, attempt to do that. But I am saying that I don't even have kids, and I can understand where the want to do that would come from, right? And Dana White said it perfectly when he was like, everybody talks about what they would do if that happened to their kid, and Cain Velasquez did it. But the unfortunate part about him actually acting on it and doing what he did was that he endangered two other people that were potentially innocent, and he actually did injure one person who, at least as far as we know right now, right, like, is innocent. Like, unless... That's why it kind of seems like what happened is, like, if I'm making assumptions here, knowing nothing, but it seems like he probably saw the fucking truck, knew it was him, and rammed the side of it and just chased it down, not even thinking about who else would be in the vehicle. That seems the most likely candidate, right? Like, he was just kind of possessed by rage and, like, ran this person down and, I don't know, just kind of, like, acted on whatever anger he was feeling, right? It doesn't feel like he took into consideration that the other two people were there. If he did, he probably did it because he felt like they were enabling the situation or involved in it in some way, I would imagine, right? Like, if he knowingly did it, but I doubt that's the case. So, unfortunately, Cain is now going to have to face all of these legal repercussions, and that's going to further hurt his family as well. Like, these situations, it did not make the situation easier on his family. And I, like, you know, he's going to have to go through all this stuff, and if he is accused of attempted murder, it could be like 20 years to life in jail. I mean, he's going to have to go through the ringer and get all this shit sorted out now, and it's a shame that it's come down to this. And, but I think that for a lot of people, Cain kind of represents what you think you'd like to do if that were to happen to somebody, you know what I mean, that you love. So, I don't know, a pretty wild situation, but... Man, it's going to be interesting to see how everything plays out in court. I'm sure it'll be well documented and something that we'll have to keep up with. But damn. Wow. Kind of leaves you speechless. I don't know. Anyway, moving on to the main card. Greg Hardy versus Sergey Spivak is going to kick things off at heavyweight. And this is an interesting matchup because it feels like Greg Hardy actually is pretty competent on the feet, right? Like, you saw him look okay against Volkov. He got knocked out by Tai Tuivasa, but he rocked him first, and then he just got a little bit too overexcited, so a little bit of his greenery showing there, a little bit of inexperience coming through in that situation. But he definitely knows how to box. He throws combinations together and stuff. He seems to be settling down a little bit in terms of his pace. He uses decent footwork to walk guys backwards. I mean, he's not... everything's, like, not... The edges aren't all rounded out, you know what I mean? But he's still pretty damn good, and he's got a lot of power, and that makes him dangerous, right? So, he's going to be facing off against a guy in Spivak who is coming off of a win over Alexei Oleinik, you know? Well, that was his most recent win. He got knocked out by Tom Aspinall. But a lot of guys seem to be getting knocked out by Tom Aspinall, man. Like, Tom Aspinall is pretty goddamn good. So it's hard to put a ton of stock into that when judging this particular fight, right? I like to look at the Alexei Oleinik fight because if you watch Greg Hardy fight Marcin Tybura, he did very well in the first round, kind of dotting Marcin Tybura up, and then Tybura started getting a little bit loose in the second round. But once Tybura landed the takedown, it was over. I mean, it didn't look like Greg Hardy had any idea how to get up from the bottom. So I'm guessing that in the gap that he's had between his last fight and this one, he's going to put a lot of emphasis into working from the bottom and working to get back to his feet. Right? And what do you do if the initial takedown defense, the steps on the feet fail and you do have to work off your back? I would imagine that would be a point of emphasis. So I think we'll see improvements from him in that regard. But the reason that I really wanted to pay attention to the Spivak versus Alexei Oleinik fight is because Oleinik is well renowned for his grappling, right? And in this fight, you were able to see that A, Oleinik wasn't able to finish Spivak. And Spivak was able to gain top position at times. And when he was there, he was able to maintain it, right? Like in the second round, he kind of just framed off of Oleinik. Oleinik had a pretty good first round. But in the second, Spivak just kind of framed off him when they were in the clinch and ended up on top. Went for a guillotine at the end, lost top positioning. But, you know, still felt like he won the round. And then he ended up on top position again during a scramble in the third round, and that's how, like, the fight ended. So, I mean, you got to see that he knows what's going on the ground. And he also, you've seen him display wrestling offense in the past, right? Not that he's not good on the feet and stuff, but, like, he is probably, I would guess, going to have to lean on that against Greg Hardy if he wants to pick up a win. I think that standing on the feet with Greg Hardy is still a bad idea. I actually think that he actually kind of has a good sense of what's going on in terms of the range and distance. One thing about Hardy is he does seem to tire a little bit. I don't think he's figured out, like, necessarily, like, where he needs to fight to be able to maintain it. Like I said, he seems to have, like, reined it in a little bit, but I still think he has to figure out how to fight, like, at a consistent pace for all three rounds. That's a problem for a lot of heavyweights, though. But in the striking exchanges, I actually think I'm giving the advantage to Hardy. I think you'll see him throw more kicks and stuff. I think that you'll see him land and it'll be impactful. The big question is going to be, when they get into these clinching situations up against the cage, has he done enough work to A, prevent the takedown, and B, get back to his feet quick and quickly when the takedown does occur, right? If he's fixed those things, Greg Hardy's an underdog in this fight. I think he wins. I think he surprises a lot of people. I think he looks good on the feet. I think that he hurts Spivak when he hits him, and I think Spivak's going to want to start initiating and pushing this up against the cage to avoid the power of Hardy, and that's where we're going to get questions answered. If Hardy hasn't worked on those things and hasn't taken the appropriate action to correct that, you're going to see Spivak just grind out a three-round victory, I think. Or maybe pick up a TKO one because he puts him in a compromising position and just wails away on him, similar to how Tybura did. But if Hardy's put the work in and picked up on some things, I think you're going to see Greg Hardy win this fight. I think he's going to address that stuff. I really do. And I think that when somebody like that, like, purposefully addresses somebody who's as talented as Hardy is, addresses an issue like that, I think they can make pretty drastic improvement pretty quickly. I think I'm taking Greg Hardy in this fight. I think he wins by knockout. I think he's going to be able to stuff some takedowns, maybe find a way to get back to his feet, even if it's just by creating a scramble, right? Creating some momentum with his hips, off-balancing his opponent, scrambling up. Like, if he can get back to his feet, I think Greg Hardy has a pretty decent chance to win this fight. So I'm going with Greg Hardy, man. I'm going with the underdog in this one. Call me crazy. Next is about at welterweight, and this will be the debut at welterweight for Kevin Holland. He's going up against Alex Cowboy Oliveira. Now, Oliveira is one of those guys, man, who is willing to put on a show, and he just has, like, wild-ass fights, like his fight against Nico Price. Like, go back and watch any of them. He's crazy, and he's fun to watch. But his style leaves him open to getting damaged a lot, I feel. And you kind of saw this in the Randy Brown with somebody who is very sharp and precise with the striking. Randy Brown brought that, like, jab out and then brought the right hand over top and caught him so fucking clean and then went through and strangled him, right? So he does leave openings for people who are more technically proficient than him, I think. And I think Kevin Holland, being long, lengthy, having fought the people he's fought at 185 pounds, having gained all the experience that he did at a weight class heavier than where Oliveira fights, right? Kevin Holland's coming down in weight to 170. Oliveira has floated to, like, 155. I think Kevin Holland's going to be significantly bigger than him. And I think that while Oliveira does some things very well on the feet, and it's not that I'm not saying that his striking isn't technical and that how he throws techniques and stuff. I'm saying that he just leaves opening. I think that he leaves opening for technical strikers like Kevin Holland. I think Kevin Holland is going to find openings. I think he's going to be stronger than Oliveira. I don't think he kind of has to worry about the threat of the takedown, but it's not to the level that he's been seeing so far with guys like Derek Brunson. I think you're going to see that Holland, if he gets pushed up against the cage, is able to defend the takedowns. And I think that this is just a favorable matchup for Kevin Holland pretty much everywhere it goes, right? I think he has an advantage on the ground. I think he has a little bit of an advantage in the striking department. And I just think that he's, like, kind of the bigger guy, and he's going to bully Oliveira around in some of those situations in there. So Kevin Holland's a brown belt too, man. I mean, he's got good grappling. I just think that this is, like I said, there's just something, like, I think Kevin Holland's going to be a little bit ahead of Oliveira in almost every department. Like, everywhere they go, Holland's going to have an answer for it. And I think it'll frustrate Oliveira. And, yeah, I think Kevin Holland walks away with the win in this one. I don't know exactly how, to be honest. You know, I'm kind of leaning towards a decision. I think Oliveira will be kind of hard to finish, but I do think that Holland will take advantage of, like I said, those gaps that Oliveira leaves in his game that allow him to be hit. I think you'll see Holland capitalize on those. And who knows, man, maybe Holland does pick up a finish, but I kind of just see Holland beating Oliveira up over the course of the three rounds. All right, moving on. We got Edson Barboza versus Bryce Mitchell in a featherweight bout. Now, Bryce Mitchell has looked phenomenal on the ground, right? When he gets guys there, like you saw against Matt Sales, he hit that twister, right? And then he goes and fights Charles Rosa and dominates him the entire fight, right? Just when he gets guys down, he has incredible pressure that he keeps on them. He slices through position. He gets to mount. He's hunting for things like the twister. He's taking your back. He's threatening with arm triangles. And he's very good at passing, right? Just constantly cooking you from the top. And Edson Barboza is known as more of a striker, right? Obviously, but has had a lot of experience against high-level wrestlers, right? This guy has fought Kevin Lee. This man has fought Habib. He's felt world-class. Like, we're kind of figuring out. We know kind of when you look at what Bryce Mitchell did to Charles Rosa, and Charles Rosa is a legit black belt. Like, yeah, it's world-class, but, like, Habib is, like, the elite of the elite, right? Barboza's felt that, and it's going to be interesting to see I know that, like, Bryce Mitchell's like, I'm a fighter. This is not a striker versus grappler matchup, but I do think that Bryce Mitchell's going to find that he doesn't want to stand up with Edson Barboza very long. That's not the path to victory here. Somebody as explosive as he is, somebody who has had the success in the striking department throughout his UFC career like he has, I think Mitchell's competent there. I think he knows how to stand and fight. I think he's a good kickboxer. He'll throw some surprising stuff at you, but you did see him start to get exposed and backed up a little bit in the Andre Feely fight in those scenarios, right? So, I think it's important that Bryce Mitchell gets his fight to the ground. The question is going to be, can he get it there? And you did get to see, one of the things that I really do like about Bryce Mitchell is the fact that he chain wrestles so well. Like, when he gets in on a single leg, if the first attempt fails, he's just pursuing it relentlessly and going through different sequences until he gets you to the ground, right? So, that's something that was nice to see in the Feely fight against a guy who is definitely competent. The question is going to be, can you do it against a guy, like we said, who has seen Habib and Kevin Lee? And another thing that I think is going to be kind of important in this fight, because I think this might be one of the most important aspects of the fight, to be honest. I don't know. This is just kind of how I see it playing out, I guess. Bryce Mitchell, when he goes through these things, is very focused. He gets very focused on finding a specific submission, right? I think that when you look at the moments where Edson Barboza has really struggled on the ground against people like Habib and Kevin Lee, those are two guys who use ground and pound very effectively. And you haven't seen that a lot from Mitchell. Like, he'll definitely hit you with stuff while you're down there, but he's very focused on controlling the positions and hunting for a submission, which is great. But I think that Edson Barboza is going to be competent enough defensively to get out of certain scenarios if Bryce Mitchell's not threatening with punches. Like, I just don't think he can get into a pure jiu-jitsu battle if he gets top position on Barboza, because I think Barboza will find a way back to the feet if Bryce Mitchell is not constantly harassing him with ground and pound. If he doesn't have fists going to his face, knees working and stuff like that, I think Barboza's eventually going to find a way out of those situations. You know, I think you have to offer more layers of complexity when you start getting up into these rankings. And I don't think that strictly controlling them like you're on top in a jiu-jitsu match is enough. I think Bryce Mitchell is really going to have heavy emphasis on ground and pound to beat Barboza. If he doesn't, if he's just focused on the control, I think you'll see Barboza get back up and start giving Bryce Mitchell problems and maybe hand him his first loss of his career. I really think so. I really think the most important thing, I think you'll see Bryce Mitchell get the fight to the ground. And the question will be, can Bryce Mitchell keep him there? And I think one of the keys to keeping him there is going to be constantly harassing him and distracting him with ground and pound. Because if not, I think Barboza is going to be good enough to get up, right? I really think so. So that to me is one of the most important aspects. Is Bryce Mitchell going to implement more ground and pound as opposed to trying to control the top position, right? So we'll see. And Barboza's been in dogfights, so he'll go through some fire to get out of those positions and get back to his feet. Like, this ain't a jiu-jitsu match. I'll get punched in the face if it means getting back up. Like, Barboza will do that, and he will try. You got to see his heart on display in the Khabib fight, right? This is going to be a test for Bryce Mitchell, man. I'm actually kind of surprised that Barboza's as big a dog as he is, but what can you do? All right, moving on to the co-main event. A five-round fight between Rafael dos Anjos and Renato Moicano. This fight obviously is coming together after Rafael Fiziev tested positive for COVID and was dropped off the card. And like we said earlier, this fight's not quite as exciting just because Rafael Fiziev has already knocked out Renato Moicano. But it is a good matchup. Renato Moicano looked great in his last fight against Alexander Hernandez. But I think he has a couple things working against him, right? First off, Rafael dos Anjos is a main event machine. He's a former world champion, right? And he has been preparing for a five-round fight against Rafael Fiziev for quite some time now. He's had a full camp to prepare for going five rounds, right? Also, Rafael dos Anjos is just a very well-rounded, complete martial artist. This is a very difficult fight. I don't care about his age. This is a very difficult fight to take on short notice after you just went through all the preparation. I'm telling you, there's like something about, like, sometimes short notice fights work out, but there is something I think about going through an entire camp and then going through the actual fight and like going through that actual battle, like the whole mental thing. Like, once you go through that, there has to be like some sort of dump afterwards, and maybe some guys respond to it better than others. I don't know, but I just never like it. And I never like it in situations like this one where dos Anjos is primed, ready, has gone through a camp. Everything's probably on fucking point. He's been preparing for a guy who's a lot more dangerous on the feet than Fiziev was, he's been preparing for a guy who's extremely dangerous on the feet and Fiziev, and Moicano's probably not quite as dangerous in that specific department. And, you know, Moicano's got good wrestling, but RDA is probably the better wrestler. Like, this is just a tough spot for Moicano to be in. Maybe he pulls it off. Moicano's got some slick-ass striking, man. He does some great counter work. But I don't know that it's going to be enough to beat RDA on short notice. RDA is the fucking animal. He is. And you can tell that he works hard because his cardio always comes through in fights. I mean, if you look at when he won the title from Anthony Pettis, he just fucking put it on him and never stopped, right? RDA is one of the baddest motherfuckers in the history of the lightweight division. I love watching RDA. He's one of my favorite mixed martial artists to watch fight because he's so well-rounded. And I just think that Moicano might be able to expose some things in the striking department. Like I said, he might be able to find some openings in counter and maybe eclipse RDA, or maybe he gets him hurt and maybe just outpoints him. But I really kind of feel like, personally, RDA has the edge in this one. He has the experience. And Moicano's only main event, by the way, has been against the Korean Zombie, and he got finished in, like, no time at all. Right? So, there's not a lot. I don't know. There's just not a lot that's giving me confidence in picking Renato Moicano in this fight. Like I said, maybe he exposes some stuff in the striking department. Maybe he goes out and surprises everybody, starts lighting RDA up, finding openings. I just don't think it goes that way. I think RDA picks up a pretty grindy, like I said, like grinded out type of win. I think he wins a unanimous decision in this one. Or gets him out of there, right? RDA will do that to you sometimes. Like, if you're not prepared and you're not ready for it, like Neil Magny, like that situation, like, he'll blitz through you and he'll get you out of there. So, I don't know, man. RDA could win this fight in several different ways, I think. All right, moving on to the welterweight main event between Colby Covington and Jorge Masvidal. Now, obviously, a lot of the talk has been around, like, you know, these guys used to be best friends at American Top Team, and then a bunch of shit happened, blah, blah, blah. I don't know. Now we get here, they fucking hate each other. Masvidal is saying he didn't pay his trainer. I don't know, all this stuff, right? And that's kind of the narrative that the UFC's been selling. And it is, I mean, like, it's fun, right? But what's more interesting to me is how these guys are going to match up stylistically. Colby Covington is obviously much more, I think he's going to have an edge in the wrestling department, especially offensively, right? He'll be able to offensively wrestle better than Jorge will. But Jorge has great takedown defense. Jorge, I think, is going to be smoother on the feet than Colby. But the thing about Colby is he is always keeping volume in your face. And he is a good boxer. Like, he has a very firm understanding of range and everything, head movement. He throws combinations. He has good timing, you know. And despite the fact that he might not have that one-shot knockout power, you definitely get to see that he hurt Usman a couple times in both of the fights that they had, right? He's tough. He can take a shot. He is... Colby Covington is fucking good, man. His cardio is on through the roof, very well-rounded. And he can do two of the most fundamentally important things in MMA, I think, and that's box and wrestle. And he does them both very well, right? The question is going to be, can Jorge keep his back off the cage? Can Jorge keep this fight in open space? Because if they get there, I know that Colby's a good boxer. And Colby will probably try to keep the pressure on him, etc., right? He'll do all this stuff. He'll be crowding him, blah, blah, blah. But if they can keep the fight in open space, if Jorge can keep the fight there where he has room, I know that Colby's technically sound and all this stuff, but there's like an elegance to the way that Jorge Masvidal like throws punches. There's going to be a smoothness there that Colby is just not able to replicate and that I don't think he'll have. The question is going to be, like I said, it all boils down to like, it's going to boil down to footwork and whether Jorge can connect and keep Colby at the end of his punches. If Colby's able to crowd a space and get into that tight boxing range, he's probably going to look to push Jorge up against the cage and get a relatively boring win. You know what I mean? I don't think he wants to stand in the middle and box with Jorge Masvidal. I think Jorge will start lighting him up. Maybe not, but I think, like I said, there's just like a smoothness to the way that Jorge throws stuff. I think Jorge will have an advantage in the striking department. His kicks and everything are thrown a little bit more naturally. Everything comes with a little bit more tenacity and speed and fluidity, a little bit more precision there. But another thing to keep in mind, guys, is if Colby is able to start putting the pressure on Jorge Masvidal, Colby can still fucking crack, right? Like we just said you saw him hurt Kamaru Usman, and Jorge Masvidal just got knocked out by Usman, and knocked out pretty bad, guys. And sometimes when people get knocked out like that, it's career changing for them, and their ability to take a punch changes a little bit. So don't be surprised if in this fight, if you see Colby really start putting it on Jorge, if those shots start hurting him, or if he starts being able to just like move his head and defend a little bit less effectively than he used to be able to. He'll be getting hit a little bit more with those shots, then they'll start rocking him. You know what I mean? It's like, I think that's a real possibility. I think he might go out. I think Colby Covington wins this fight. I do kind of think he smothers Jorge, and I like the fact that he's a better offensive wrestler and that he'll look to put this fight up against the cage. I think that he's going to be successful in doing that. I just don't think he'll give Masvidal the room that he needs to work with, and I don't think Masvidal will be able to keep up with the volume that he's going to need to keep Colby off of him, right? Unless he lands a shot that hurts Colby and he can knock him out, right, and rock him in some way. But over the course of five rounds, if it plays out that way, I don't think that Jorge is going to be able to keep him at bay long enough. And I think Colby's going to eventually crowd the space, push things up against the cage, get into tight boxing situations. But don't be surprised, guys, if he hurts Jorge with one of the punches that he lands or several of them. Because I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see how Jorge takes a punch, man. I don't want to like lay doubt in that or whatever. Like Jorge Masvidal is the fucking man. Tough as fuck. But sometimes when you get finished like that, everyone's human, man. And I know it's game bred and all that shit, and he's a bad motherfucker, but you never know. Anyway, though, guys, I'm taking Colby Covington. I think he's going to win a five-round unanimous decision. I think he's just going to use his wrestling and his boxing, close things off, and get it done that way. But like I said, don't be surprised if those shots start hurting Jorge. That's going to wrap this one up, guys. Thank you so much for tuning in. Much appreciated. Enjoy the fights on Saturday night. Hit the subscribe button if you guys enjoyed. Give it a thumbs up. All that good shit. Let me know who you guys think is going to win. And I will catch you guys later. Bye-bye.